The Congressional Budget Office has found the Defense Department could save billions by replacing uniformed people with civilian or contractors in certain non-combat support jobs. But should it? Nora Bensahel is a military analyst and scholar in residence at American University. She joins me now with analysis of the CBO report. Nora, great to have you back.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so they have found apparently, well, obviously in response to a request from somebody in Congress, that they could replace these 80,000 jobs, not even one for one necessarily. What do you think about that analysis? Do they have it right in the first place, financially?
They're very credible on the numbers. I don't have the the analytic background to criticize whether they've gotten the numbers right, but they almost always do have them right. But what I would say is that what's important about these numbers is that they're not savings to DOD specifically. They're savings to the U.S. government as a whole. In fact, what the CBO report also found is that the cost to DOD to replace those positions with civilians would actually increase slightly. And that's because more than a quarter of the cost of active duty personnel are actually borne by other agencies other than DOD, including the VA, the Treasury Department, even the Department of Education. So there may be use if you're looking to cut savings in the government as a whole, to cut costs in the government as a whole to look at this, but it's not necessarily going to save DOD in its budget a lot of money.
So the people that are uniformed now doing these particular jobs, your CBO is saying their cost is not fully borne by the military now?
That's right. People on active duty, period, not just in those support functions, but any person on active duty, about a quarter of the cost of having them, not necessarily their salaries, but if you look in all the other benefits, what the VA needs to pay in, again, education is involved for, the school system that DOD runs gets some money from the Department of Education.
And what are the types of jobs that they're doing that would be, I guess, their support, but not necessarily direct combat?
No, that's exactly right. Every position in the government, in DOD, is categorized as something that must be done by government personnel or something that could be done by outsiders. And so there is some flexibility on the positions that are known as inherently governmental as to whether you should fill them with active duty people or support people.
And so what would the advantage be besides cost savings, or is it cost savings? Would it improve operations in some manner? Would it give the DOD more flexibility, or is it simply government-wide cost savings?
Well, obviously, the government-wide cost savings is probably what Congress is going to look at the most here, because saving between $3 and $5 billion a year over time is not trivial when you're talking about the size of the government and the debates about government spending. But I think there are some other reasons why this study may be very important for DOD that go beyond the specific question that CBO was looking at. The reason to transfer people to transfer jobs from being performed by active duty military people is to preserve as many people in the fighting force as possible. Having more than 25% of the people on active duty serving in these support functions, not focusing on combat positions and all of that, is a very large percentage of people who require expensive training, who are very important to the national defense of this country, doing things that are not directly at the pointy end of the spear. And so I think that's probably, from a DOD perspective, one of the main reasons to be thinking about shifting jobs from people who are on active duty into civilian positions or to contractors, so you can preserve the highest capability in the fighting force as possible.
Is there any indication that the people that are now doing these non-combat jobs could be converted to combat?
Yes, it is possible. Now, it's important to note the CBO study assumed that by transferring those jobs to civilians that it discussed, about those 80,000 jobs, that those positions would be cut from military end strength. I don't think that would be the right policy choice, even though that's what would generate the cost savings. I think the reason to do that is because of you want to keep as much military power in the fighting force as possible, and so as many support functions as you can put on the civilian side, whether that's government employees or contractors, that preserves as much capability as you can, as I said, at the very tip of the spear, the forces that you want to be most ready in case they are called upon in the case of conflict or war.
We're speaking with Nora Bensahel, a scholar in residence at American University. So just for example, suppose a given uniformed service, and I'm just making up this number, had 500,000 troops, and say 50,000 of them, 10%, are doing non-combat and support types of jobs. If they were all replaced with civilians, you're saying a better policy would be to redeploy those people as end strength and keep the same total number instead of just keeping the smaller end strength and getting rid of those people towards civilian.
Yes, as a general principle, I think that is right. The services have very different numbers as to which positions they categorize as inherently governmental, and that's, you know, means either military or civilian as opposed to contracting it out. But there may be room to look at that and see whether to revisit that in some of the services. For example, the Army categorizes 90% of its jobs, according to the CBO report, as needing to be performed by government people. The Navy only 60%, and the Air Force only 40%. So there may be some ability to, you know, rethink which jobs do need to be performed in that way. But yes, I think that preserving as much end strength as possible, given the very complicated and dangerous world that we're in, with threats growing from both terrorism and from aggressive states, maintaining as much military power as possible is the way that the United States should go.
And there is some precedence for this. I mean, most of the armed services used to have people that did software coding for decades. But a couple of decades ago, they started reducing those numbers and using contractors. What are some of the other types of jobs, like supply and supply clerks and that kind of thing?
Yes, that's right. And in some cases, some maintenance functions as well. Another thing that I think this study points out is the need to look at the work that's being performed, right? The study assumed that all the work that's being performed in DoD now continues to need to be done. But there's plenty of room to reform DoD business practices to make some of that work go away and make it much more efficient and much more effective. So that would also be a way of achieving the goal of saving as much combat power as possible while still being able to reduce the number of civilian, reduce the cost of the workforce overall.
Now, that imbalance in the percentage of jobs that are considered inherently governmental between the Army and the other armed services, what could be behind that one, do you think?
Well, I think some of it is simply the nature of the services. I mean, the Air Force does, because it is a very technological force, these are very complicated and sophisticated airplanes, they do contract out a lot of their maintenance in a way that the Army can't. So some of it does have to do with service differences. But I do think that, especially given the budget constraints, especially given the demands of a very uncertain international environment, it's a good time for all of the services to be going back and looking through what they categorize as what to see if there are, if they can save some end strength numbers and be able to put more people in combat positions and these kinds of maintenance positions too.
So this could be a cultural shift for people used to seeing support people in uniform, and it could also be kind of a bucket of cold water for someone who's in support.
Well, anybody who's serving in those positions in uniform is already a soldier, sailor, airman, or marine. I mean, they take these jobs as they rotate through their careers, so I don't think that part would necessarily be a surprise. But yes, you know, to the extent that this these recommendations go forward, there will be some of that culture change. Now, this has happened before. There have been waves where during periods of time where this has happened, so it's not unprecedented. But, you know, that trend may continue even further if some of these reforms are enacted.
Is your sense that the brass, the leadership, might fight this one, or do you think they see the value in it, in bringing those positions over to the tooth, if you will, away from the tail?
Well, I think they would see value in that. They're not going to see a whole lot of value in this particular CBO report, not because it's a bad report, but simply because the finding is that it won't save DoD any money, and it might very slightly increase DoD costs. This CBO estimate is it would increase DoD costs by about 3% if those 80,000 people positions were transferred to DoD civilians. But the broader goal of trying to preserve as much combat power as possible and trying to get as many positions shifted either to civilian government positions or to contractors, I think is something that all of the service chiefs are interested in, because they see the demands around the world, they see the strains on the force, and they want to be best prepared to address them.
Military analyst Nora Bensahel is a scholar in residence at American University. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you again for having me.
Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and click share with friends.